Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Though your world is torn apart and you're left with a broken heart, and you feel that there's no real healing inside, oh no. But this I know, it's more than a feeling. Jesus said it in his word, you cannot feel it, just believe it. He'll make everything, he'll make it all right. He will make it all right.
Oh. Welcome to Don't Give Up Radio Show. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans. And I'm so happy to be bringing this broadcast to you, because as I do the show and we talk about the various crisis points that we have in our lives, we have them as mothers, we have them as parents, we have them as people. But, you know, our children are so important, and we have to take the time to remember them, remember their emotions, remember how they are being formed, and what we do and what we say really matters. It really impacts them. And often when I have the show, I start off asking my guests about their past. Now, why do I do that? Because while our past doesn't have to designate who we are by any means, it certainly does mold us. It does have some contribution into our character, into our personality. And it's so important to understand that those years are very precious, and what happens during those years can indeed have a powerful impact on how we view ourselves and the world around us. And so I'm very happy today to have as a guest Charlie. She is an author and a wonderful person, I might add. She wrote a book called Special Friends with Special Needs. It's a children's book, and as many of you know, I have a children's book called Ambrose, which is a reverse story on the Garden of Eden. And I thought it would be a good way to express to kids and help them to understand the voices in life that you really should not listen to, as opposed to the voices that you should. And here with Special Needs with Special Friends, one of the passions behind making this book about kids with special needs is the fact that how kids speak to each other and how the interaction that they have with the world around them is so vital and so important. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you.
Well, thank you, Jackie, and I'm very honored to be here with you today.
Well, I appreciate it, and I like meeting fellow authors, especially the ones who take it very seriously and are really passionate about it. And so, you know, as the format is with this show, I always want to know about my guests and see if what you're doing now started somehow earlier in your life some way or led to to this moment. And so tell us a little bit about who you are. What was your childhood like? What type of person, if I was going to meet Kathy back then, who would I have met and what would I have seen?
Well, as a child, I was a very happy child, very loving and caring and affectionate and always laughing. I was also, though, on the flip side, very bashful and shy. I had the most wonderful mother. She was an amazing person and my best friend and mentor and soulmate. On the flip side of that, my father was abusive. He was also an absentee father. He was a gambler and an alcoholic, and those were the things he'd rather do than be at home with us. We were more an interference in his life.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a mouthful right there. It's interesting how, for your own personality, you had the fun and exciting side, and then you had the timid and bashful side, and it reflects a bit of what was going on in your home, because you had, you know, this great mom on the one side that sounds like brought you a lot of happiness, and on the flip side, you had this alcoholic, abusive father. So we know, and I know from doing the show and speaking to many people, that there are always effects on the children when they're in that type of a household environment where one of the parents are very dysfunctional or abusive. So talk to us about, did you have siblings? How did you guys manage that period of time? What was life like for you on a daily basis?
Well, yes, I had siblings. I have an older brother, 4 years older, and a younger sister, 4 years younger than I am. And we all laughed and kept each other happy, and we stuck together and helped each other through the rough times with our father. Mainly, he was never there. But my mother was this happy, wonderful, counseling type person, so the friends of my brother and the friends of my sister and then my friends, so all the different age groups, always wanted to be at my house. It was a happy, wonderful, fun environment. If other children had issues, they always came to my mother to ask for advice, and she kept us happy and kept our lives full and was always involved in everything in our lives. And it sounds like this wonderful childhood, and it really was until my father came home. And then that's when everyone headed out the doors and windows, and the whole climate changed.
Oh, my. I'm sorry for chuckling, but I just had a vision of, you know, teens and kids scattering out of doors and windows.
And they actually did.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow. And so that just tells me what the environment was like in the home. You know, it's interesting. I am an only child, and I often say I was an only lonely child. And my mom was a very strict disciplinarian, and rightfully so. She had a lot on her plate as a single mom trying to raise a kid. But my dad was never in the home. So I didn't actually realize I was missing anything until my friends and I from the block went to school, and most of them had only moms at home too. So dad was, or father was, this foreign concept to us. And so we went to school, and they talked about making cards for Father's Day, which was quite hilarious because I'd say over 90% of the class did not have fathers in the home. It's dad, actually. And I tilted my head, and for the first time, I realized that there was something missing. There was something that I did not have. And as much as that may have shaped me, it's very different than coming home at the end of the day or even going to a friend's house and seeing that their family dynamic is very different than what you're experiencing at home. Did you experience that? Did you experience kind of a, you know, going to other friends' houses and seeing what it should be like?
Oh, absolutely. I think I would much rather have not had my father in my life than to have him in my life in the context that he was, because he was there, but he wasn't. He was there physically, but not emotionally. And I would go to friends' houses, and I'd see how their parents interacted, and the affection, and holding hands, and laughing, and having a family life. And I had a father, but he didn't want to be part of it. He wasn't part of it. So all our school functions, everything we did, my mother was there, but my father wasn't. And the really heartbreaking part was he could have been, and he chose not to.
Yes. In fact, you said something to me when we spoke that I thought was quite unique. Your father took the time to take family vacations with you. You would leave together, but then what would he do?
Well, then when we got to where we were going, he was once again absent. He would be gambling and drinking, and we'd be left alone. So my mother would be the one to entertain us and take us places and show us things. But it was all, that was another example. We'd go on these trips, and you'd see all these families together, and you'd go out to eat and sit at a table, and all the families were together. And our dad wasn't there, or father. He was a father, not really a dad, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't there, and he could have been. That was the hardest part. Not that he
right.
just wasn't involved. He was involved, but he chose not to be there.
Wow. I can imagine that being terribly devastating to know that he's there somewhere in the crowd, in the space where you are, but he has chosen to separate and not be with you. And so that is beyond being an absentee dad. That is really rejection, outright in your face rejection. I wonder to myself, you know, why did he even get married in the first place or have a family? Do you have any understanding about that?
Yes, I really firmly believe that my father was born and raised a Catholic, and we all were Catholic. And not that it had anything to do with any specific religion. I think no matter what religion he was in, he would have chosen to handle things the way that he did, because it was more to impress his family and do what he thought his family expected of him. In other words, to put up front, to have the perfect family, the wife and the children and the pretty home, and look respectable in the business world because he was a high-powered businessman. So appearance was everything to him. And I think that's all we were for him. We were objects. I think it's so heartbreaking, because it's one thing to have someone not in your life or passed away than to have a father that you know doesn't love you. And you're just an object that he needs to have on display.
Oh, my. I could, like, my heart just sank when you said that. And yet I know it's a reality for many people.
Yeah.
And being a young child, it's one thing when you have problems at home, and then those things form your character a little bit. And I'm wondering, do you think that kind of, though you were fun and happy on one aspect, do you think that's probably why you were shy and timid in the other way?
You know, I think so. And I never put all that together until in my adult life, when I reflected back on my childhood. And I really think it did. I think I never felt my own self-worth. I think I lacked self-esteem, because I wasn't important to my father, so how could I be important to anybody else? How could I be important at all? And so it definitely affected, I think, my attitude. And then, of course, I didn't speak out. I didn't speak out a lot, because my mother was such a sweet, loving, kind person, and she wanted to shelter us from all of the heartbreak from my father. So she tried so hard to cover it up and make things good and hide and cry in private from us, that I guess that kind of formed the way I handled things, was to stay silent and stay back.
When you say that you didn't speak out, are you talking about in school or with kids on the block or in the neighborhood? I mean, what was the situation? What was happening to you?
You know, if I knew somebody, I just, you know, they called me Chatty Cathy, so I was very talkative and outgoing and happy and joking and fun-loving and all those things. It was when I was in a situation where I didn't know someone that I was not in my comfort zone. I actually did overcome that in my high school years. My brother helped me and inspired me, and I actually wrote an essay about it and won a Scholastic Award about how I overcame that shyness and bashfulness. I think it was the issues in my childhood from my father and upbringing that really caused me to be the way I was at the time.
Right, and I know you had a little bit of a weight issue, and, you know, kids take liberties of calling names and teasing and all of that stuff, and these things, you know, they form us. I remember on my blog, everybody was out playing this one summer evening, and I had to beg my mom to go out because her rule was the sun goes down, you're inside, you know. So
right,
summer,
absolutely.
I had to beg her, you know, to extend the curfew this one night, and it was one of those things where everything that she would, you know, try to spare you from, you end up experiencing. And so there were the two popular boys on the block, and they gathered all of the girls around, and they were kind of the way you would pick a baseball team. They were kind of picking who would be their girl by first to last, which was a horrible thing that we even stood around.
Oh, no.
I guess it's an ego thing to see where you fall, to see if you would be the first
one. Oh, absolutely.
And, of course, not only was I the last one that they chose, they both decided they wouldn't choose me at all, right? So it was not only you're not even last, you're just not chosen. You get to sit on the bench and just stay right there, right? So it was the perfect ugly duckling story.
Oh,
but those things,
worst.
You know, when kids do that, they don't really realize how devastating they are being to the person. And they don't know what's going on in your home and what you're facing and what's going on in your life. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Kathy's journey and who she was as an adult and how God started to show her little things that she could do to make a difference in children's lives. Charlie, a.k.a. Chatty Kathy, and we're enjoying a conversation that really has ups and downs in it as we listen to her life, her experience as a child growing up with someone who was an alcoholic and a gambler in the home, but yet balanced out well with a parent who was very loving and went out of her way to provide happy times for the family. But as we grow up, as we develop, I know it happened for me, Kathy. I was very much a people pleaser. I very much always wanted to please my mom. And as an extension of that, and having experienced so much rejection from my peers growing up, even though when I evolved in many other ways, physically and emotionally, I was still very handicapped in that area of wanting to people please. Is that something that, you know, followed you as well as you got into your adulthood?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I always wanted to be what everybody wanted me to be and say what everybody wanted me to say and just wouldn't speak out for my wishes or actually to defend myself. And in business, it also had an effect on me, and the fact that people who wanted to move ahead, I wouldn't stand up to. I more or less would take the back seat, and so it caused some abusive situations actually in the business world, and people took advantage of my demeanor and the fact that I wouldn't stand up against them.
You know, someone sent me a video of Oprah Winfrey. She was sharing a story about how she learned to break people pleasing. It was very intentional. She actually decided, okay, I'm going to learn how to say no, and I'm going to start here, right? And she started to do it with big things. But what she said that she realized was every time she was saying yes and just going along passively with the thing that she really didn't want to do in her heart, that, you know, that was against her inner will, that she was really letting that person know it's okay to do this to me. I like it. Come back again and do it one more time. And so
do
we don't
again,
really
yes.
realize that's the message that we're sending. Can you give us an example from your work career? Because you talked about, you know, them passing you over and stuff. So can you talk to us about an example, something tangible that we can wrap our hands around and see how it worked with you?
Yes, actually, I was in a situation where I worked with a group of people, and I was the new kid on the block, so to speak, and the other people had all worked together for 25 years, and I was more or less hired into an equal position with one of the other employees, and it was a situation where in order for the other person to make themselves look good, they would set me up for failure. And how was I going to speak up when they had known the other people for over 20 years and I'm the new kid? Who are they going to believe? And so this was used just in massive proportions against me. And
you know, when you say that this was used against you, I'm assuming that this personality realized that you were kind of the person that doesn't like confrontation and that was an easy pushover, if you will. They actually verbally threatened you. What were some of the things they would say to you, Kathy?
Well, actually, that they would get me fired. And who would they believe, me or this other person? And it was strictly to make this other person looked better. So I was always set up for failure. And then I would all of a sudden be their very best friend. So they would reel me back in with kindness and all sorts of good feelings just to set me up to knock me down again. And that's kind of what abusers do anyway. And it became a very demeaning. But once again, I was in fear of losing my job, so I remained silent until the administration changed. And once that happened, then we were on equal grounds, and I was able to stand up and say, this ends now. And it felt really good.
Right. You know, and it's interesting. We talk about bullies in terms of children, but we really
right.
don't often take that into adulthood and office situation. And yes, there definitely can be bullies in your adult lives. You know, I have a situation that I was met with when I went off to college. I went to a great university. Geneseo State is now one of the top SUNY schools in the country. And what was very interesting at that time is Geneseo was reaching out to minority populations. So there was only about 30 or 40 black students on the campus, but we were very happy. But I remember my first week on class, and I'm going, you know, into these large classroom arenas where it's like 100 people and you're small. And I looked around, and there was Hope, which was one of the lovely young ladies who used to offer Bible study in my dorm. I met her on the very first day. And so I went and I sat next to Hope. And I as I was walking towards her, there was an African-American girl who I'd never seen before, didn't know her. And she's waving me over to come sit with her. And I thought it was kind of odd, so I didn't do it. I just went and sat with my friend. And the next time I had class, this girl is now snarling at me like she's giving me the evil eye. I'm like, what is going on here? You know. And then and so one day I show up for class early, and there she is, and it's just the two of us, and you could feel this tension and uneasiness. And it's kind of like that moment where you said enough is enough. And I said, this is ridiculous. I'm in college. We're adults. You know, where is this coming from? And so I just turned around and I said, you know, what is your problem with me? And it turns out it was just all of misunderstanding. But the fact that I didn't allow her stares and snarls to intimidate me and to stand up to it gave the opportunity. And for the few times in my childhood that I had to deal with a bully, they really, sometimes all they want is for you to get to the place where you say, enough already, leave me alone. Sometimes that's what bullies are looking for you to do. They're looking for you to stand up for yourself, and as long as you don't, they will continue to do what you allow them to do. It's very, very interesting that you had to experience that as an adult, you know. How does your faith work? How did you use your faith, your prayer, your relationship with God to get through the difficult time, to talk yourself through it?
You know, I've had a very deep, close relationship with God, and that is what has helped me through so many things in my life. And I believe that things happen for a reason, and that if one door closes, it's God's way of putting you on the path that your journey is supposed to go on. And I would just pray, and I would do my part, and then I would leave the rest in God's hands. So that's kind of how I live my life, and no matter how devastating something is, I just say, take a deep breath, say a prayer, put it in God's hands, and know that whatever the outcome is, you'll be in a better place, because this is happening so that that can happen in your life.
It seems like there's so much to hope for, so many dreams I wish they all could come true. Gives me so much fun.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
You shared with me that you almost had a near-death, well, you did have a near-death experience at the age of 21. What was it that happened to you?
I had taken a medication, and it was a prescribed medication, and I had a severe reaction to it, one that no one ever had before, and it actually, I had all the symptoms of someone dying in the last stages of leukemia, and they could not figure out how to save me, so it basically came down to the fact that the doctors told my mother to the funeral arrangements and that I wouldn't be going home. I was in hospital for over a month. But I did. Just miraculously, I came around and I lived. And I thought, why me? Why did I live through this and all these other children or people didn't? What made this? And then all I could attribute it to was it was God's will, and there was a special reason for that happening.
I want that to resonate because with the listener, because that was an extremely devastating moment. Not only here you, your body's mimicking a disease, but the doctors actually told your mother to go make funeral arrangements. I mean, that is as far to the end of the road that you could imagine hearing any kind of a verdict that's going to give you any hope that there could be anything else for your life. And
exactly.
Yet God intervenes, and he lets you know that the reason why your life is being spared is because he has purpose for you, right? Because he has a plan for your life. And what I love about, as I grow in the knowledge and understanding of who God is that that purpose and plan is not dependent on us. It already exists in eternity. We're just waiting for it to manifest itself where we are. We need to come in line
yes.
with what his ideals and what his thoughts are for us. And you know, you were always a compassionate child, a compassionate person, and you had a heart for kids, especially with special needs and disabilities, early on. Talk to us about your, you know, some of the ideas and the connections that you've had with kids of special needs.
Well, I always related to children had any sort of an issue because of my childhood. But I one day happened to see a little girl, this was back in the 80s, in a wheelchair, and I thought, you know what, she should have a doll that's in the wheelchair. Why does she, she's not going to want a doll, I wouldn't, that doesn't look like me. I want one that looks like me. So I had wanted to do a line of dolls, all sorts of them for all different special needs, but it was cost prohibitive, patents, the production, so on and so forth. It just couldn't be done. And so I put it on the back burner. And then about 4 years ago, the clinic, medical clinic I was working in was closed down, and I was laid off. And I thought, you know, now I have the time and the opportunity to do this, but I still didn't have those finances to back it up. And then I thought, I've been a writer all my life, and now God gave me that talent. Now I have the opportunity, and I can still help the children. I can do it through my writing. And that's how I came about writing Special Friends with Special Needs.
You said something there, and it almost is something that could easily be slipped and go under the radar. But when you said that you never wanted any of the children to feel like you did growing up, articulate that more for me. What exactly didn't you want them to experience? But what is it that you don't want them to experience?
I don't want them to feel different. I want them to feel good about themselves, to know that we're all equal, that it doesn't matter how you walk, talk, or look, that everybody's equal in God's eyes, and those are the only eyes that matter. And I wanted them to have self-esteem and self-confidence, and to not allow the other people's viewpoints or words to hurt them. And for children who would possibly be ones doing the hurting, to understand the impact and the pain that they cause and stop, or maybe never get started down that path.
And, you know, when you said earlier, you said, you know, you felt that your childhood was lost because of the relationship that you had with your father. It stole something from you, that joy of the hugs and the kisses, and I love you, I'm proud of you. And so when you look at kids who are, you know, they have special needs, and special needs does not have to be disabilities, right? It could be a myriad
of
things.
Right.
And so,
absolutely.
You know, but society wants to pigeonhole. Society wants to say, we can only treat you this way. We can only embrace you this way. And in doing that, we allow for that same feeling of rejection to become commonplace in their lives. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yes, you have to feel good about yourself and not let the world be the one to rule your life, to take control and know that you are worthwhile, and you do equal everyone else, and to block out the hurtful words and just believe in yourself. Because I truly believe that if a child has that kind of feeling inside themselves, they can accomplish anything they want to.
When we come back, we'll hear more about Kathy's book and how it is indeed making a difference.
All right, kids, sing this with me.
When you're up, when you're down, when you smile, when you're brown, I will help you get through. I will be there for you. I will be your friend. I will be your friend.
Oh,
you've got me, I've got you. Yes, it's true. But I will be your friend.
I want to be your friend.
I will be your friend.
That's it. Come on.
When you're feeling mighty blue, you don't know what to do, just pray to God, he'll bring you through.
Yes, he will.
Cause he will be there for you. God will be your friend.
Yeah.
God will be your friend. Jesus loves me and you. Yes, it's true. And God will be your friend.
Oh,
God will be your friend.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
So we're here with Kathy Charlie, who's written a wonderful children's book for kids with special needs, and to help them to understand what it means indeed to be a true friend. And I think that's a definition that even as adults that we still need to learn and apply to our lives. And so, Kathy, before the break, you said you wanted to be able to express to these children that they're equal. You know, they're not on a separate playing field, if you will, and that your book is geared to letting them know that they're valued. So tell us the title of the book, tell us what age range it deals with, and then tell us how it came about in your heart.
The name of the book is Special Friends with Special Needs, and it's aimed primarily from second grade to seventh grade to get to children in those such critical developmental years and instill in them values and virtues that will keep them strong against so many things that they're going to come up against in their lives. It's actually a developmental, motivational, inspirational book, and it's to children, not just ones with special needs, any child, because most of us, probably all of us, have something about ourselves we don't like or we feel is inadequate. And that's where this book comes in, to teach them to have self-esteem and self-confidence, and then also to teach them kindness and compassion towards others. So it just happens to be about a group of five children. Four of them have special needs, one doesn't. And they come together and teach each other that they're not different. They're special and they're unique. And they teach all the other children and adults around them to be kind and compassionate to one another. So that's what the book is meant to do. And I was inspired to do it because I don't ever want a child to ever feel bad about themselves or inadequate or like they can't accomplish their dream. As a matter of fact, in the book, each one of the children has their dream, special dream come true with the help of their friends and the other children.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. You know, I spent the past 15 years here in New York dealing with public school education. And one of the types of programs we have in public schools here is called ICT, Classrooms Inclusive Collaborative Teaching. And so it's approximately, well, the ratio can be out of the class of 30, it should be like a maximum of 60-40, 60% general ed and 40% maximum of special needs. Initially balked at that because they had all these strange imagery in their head and they thought, you know, why is my child being put in a special ed class? But it's not a special ed class. It's a general ed class that kids with special needs can be in. And the reason for this is because studies had shown that kids that learn together and interact with each other, it doesn't matter where they fall in terms of the spectrum of IQ or learning, they actually build each other in many ways. They learn from each other. They give each other skills that they would not have gotten otherwise that are beyond what the teachers can give just from the lesson. And I have some great, I call them friends. They're younger than me. They're in high school. You know, I have a great friend named Hugo, who I think is the best. And, you know, I've had him sit on a panel discussion because I felt that he had a unique perspective that he could bring to the table, right? And I thought he would be able to offer a very unique perspective, and he was very clear. He's like, yeah, you know, people with autism think this about pictures and think this about colors, and he was able to really help me get an understanding of something I never would have if I didn't include someone who had special needs, right? And so I love that in your book, that each of them get their dreams fulfilled. And what's also great about your book, maybe it's not intentional, maybe it is, but as teachers and adults read the book to the children, they themselves get to dispel their own limited beliefs about kids with special needs. Was that a part of your intention?
One of the children in the book actually is in a school for special needs children. He has Down syndrome. And his special dream was to go to the regular school with all the other children, including the other ones that had special needs that were in the regular general population in school. And that was his special dream, and it came true, and he got to go to school with all the other children because there isn't any reason for them not to. But yes, it was geared to, in that aspect, I put that in there specifically to enlighten teachers and that don't look at it that way, and adults with children, not to keep them separate, but put them in. They want to be with everybody else. They don't want to be different. They don't want to be treated differently. They want to be just like everybody else.
Right. And it's only an issue on the school side when they must make sure that they're getting their proper services, and that I stand by because it then becomes an injustice to the child. But
right.
Otherwise, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So now I know the book, I want to be clear, the book can be read anywhere, churches, libraries, bookstores, schools, you know, in the park, it can be read by anyone. But there are values in there, values that you have taken from biblical principles and godly principles. What are some of the values that you think that a young person or anyone reading it could walk away with?
Well, actually, when I do readings, I have children raise their hand and talk about their issues, whether it's, no matter what it is, maybe it's just being bullied, or maybe it's just feeling bad about themselves. And they actually talk about it for the first time in front of other children. And they say that the characters in the book actually gave them the courage to do it. And I'll ask them if they feel better about themselves now that Timothy and his friends taught them their lessons. And they say yes. And children say the book needs to be in their school to teach everybody to be nice to each other. I mean, I get all that sort of feedback from the children, and there's no better validation than that. And that's exactly what the book is intended to do. And I see the children taking that away from the book, that it's all about being kind and believing in yourself and believing in your dreams.
Definitely. I'm reminded of Matthew 19:14. And it's interesting how behaviors with adults, I don't know what it is that we forget about what it is like to be a child for some reason. Jesus was talking, and, you know, his disciples were around, and there were children that
right.
wanted to come to Jesus, and they wanted to be around him, and they were forbidding them to come forward. And Jesus said, no, let the little children come to me. Don't hinder them, because the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. These are the ones, Jesus said, that have, and unless you as an adult, you know, have the heart of a little child, you can't even see the kingdom of heaven. That innocence, that humbleness that kids have and that we tend to lose as an adult. Jesus was saying, this is valuable to me. And anyone who harms the least of the little one of these, it would have been better for you if an anvil be tied around your neck and you be cast into the bottom of the ocean, right? So
absolutely.
He had great value on people that the world didn't have use for people who were disabled, people who were, you know, physically crippled, right? Women and little children. And he thought that these groups were extremely valuable to the kingdom of God. And so you're blessed when you can take a little life and help them to understand how much God loves them. I do a Bible camp every year for 2 weeks. In Bloomingburg, New Jersey, Pine Bush Bible Camp, and it's great because we have city kids come in, and, you know, they come in for the first couple of days, and they're like, oh, this is so corny, you know, and then by the end of the 2 weeks, they're singing, like, the kiddiest kid songs you could ever imagine, and
yeah.
they're like, you know, God is love, Jesus loves me, and that's what kids want to know, right? They want to know, see, that rejection that you felt from your father, that kind of rejection
right.
can only be erased by the love of a real father. And some kids are fortunate enough to have good stepfathers that come into their lives. That's fine if that happens. Every single person and every single child has the opportunity to know God as their father. That is what he desires. And he's the one who can erase all that pain, all that negativity that you had from your childhood, and turn it around for good. That's exactly what he did in your life. He took that pain. Instead of allowing you to be bitter, he allowed you to write this children's book with a heart of compassion, and now you're going around and touching those lives and building those lives up, and that's how we're supposed to live. I love it.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that was exactly my intention. So, you know, and it's working. I do read at schools and churches and summer camps, and I get the most incredible feedback from the children. So that's the greatest validation, is knowing that if it helps one child, it's worth it. But to know that it's helping, you know, children that everywhere I go to read to them. And it's actually in a children's hospital and Ronald McDonald Houses, and so I just to know that those children can be helped by maybe feeling good about themselves. That's all the reward I need in my life for anything.
Tell us where we can get a hold of the book and connect with you.
Actually, it's in, of course, Seattle Children's Hospital where I live. And the Seattle Ronald McDonald Houses and Monroe Library. It's in a children's outreach program here in some of the schools and churches. But Also, it can be purchased online on Amazon and CreateSpace and Barnes & Noble. My website is www.kathyskidscorner, and it's KathysKidsCorner.com. And you can purchase the book, go onto the webpage. It has a buy the book. It'll tell you all the different places and take you right to the links to buy it. My contact information is there. Anyone can feel free to contact me. I'll personally send them the book. And there's a sample of the book they can read on the webpage, and it tells all about who I am, as we've talked about, and the book and why I wrote it and so on. So that's how they can get a little bit more information.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, Jackie, thank you so much. Anything can bring awareness to help a child, and you've done that by having me on your show. And God bless you, and I can't thank you enough from the bottom of my heart for giving me this opportunity and this time to share it with you.
And I want those who are listening to understand that if you're listening right now and you don't know if you have that father relationship with God, I want you to understand that it's very easy to have. John 3:16, everyone sees it at football games and basketball games, for God so loved you that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. And so Jesus Christ himself said in John 14:6, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except through me. So then we go to Romans 10:9 that says, if you confess with your mouth Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. So once you make that prayer, that confession, that you want him to be Lord of your life, he comes in and he becomes your father. And you no longer have to worry about any deadbeat dads, any abusive dads. He becomes the father that you can always depend on. So tomorrow, because Don't Give Up is now twice a week on Saturdays and Sundays. So I want you to continue to be your own best hero and know that the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you. Good night.
You're a winner. the first.